WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In 1998, a group of Seattle librarians proposed that the whole city read Russell Banks' novel, The Sweet Hereafter, and form what would ideally become a citywide reading group. Other cities have copied the idea. Chicago read To Kill a Mockingbird, and Milwaukee is deep into David Guterson's Snow Falling on Cedars. But some recalcitrant readers, like our very own book critic Maureen Corrigan, want to pack up their book bags and head for the hills when the words reading group are mentioned.
I know I'm likely to offend some people, so I'll say it as politely as possible at the outset. I'd rather join a convent than join a book group. The silent communion between me, the reader, and the book in my hands has been such a dependable, lifelong joy that the idea of other voices intruding on that communion makes me queasy. Ditto for the thought of sitting in a room with other readers, captive to the resolutely democratic spirit of interpretation that prevails in so many book clubs. The great thing about being an English professor, besides, and I mean this sincerely, often learning from the fresh views of my students, is that I can always lay claim to the last word, cutting off the long-winded and the loony, something I couldn't do in a well-bred and well-fed book club. Why well-fed? Because so many book clubs I've known first or second-hand seem to be more about noshing and socializing than they are about reading. That's why I'm a little baffled as to what the fuss is all about regarding these citywide reading groups that are sweeping the nation. It probably doesn't matter what particular book a city has chosen, because if my experience with book clubs is any guide, lots of citizen readers won't read the assigned book all the way to the end anyway. I know I sound arrogant, but almost every time friends or acquaintances tell me about their book club meeting, they preface their account with the phrase, "I didn't get to finish the novel, but..." New York City, out of all the cities joining in this effort, has caught on that actually reading the book in question is beside the point. While Chicago, Cleveland, and Colorado Springs are pouring through Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, and Los Angeles and Palm Beach County are thumbing through Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, savvy New York started arguing about the novel that an ad hoc committee foisted on it the very second the choice was announced. Chang Ray Lee's Native Speaker, a 1995 first novel about a Korean-American immigrant in Queens, struck some New Yorkers as too flimsy, others as too potentially offensive to Asian Americans. Then, as part of the process of slowly recovering its cherished identity as the most obnoxious city in America, New York had to go and make matters worse by sneering at the middle-brow earnestness of all the other reading cities. Columbia University professor Anne Douglas, who's the author of the sublime book Terrible Honesty, A Cultural History of New York in the 1920s, was one of the first of the prominent New York literati to blow a raspberry at other cities' reading groups. "That is for the provinces," Douglas said. "As far as reading goes, we New Yorkers are the most important group of readers and critics in the country, and even possibly the world. I would prefer to let us go on our merry way as we have for the last 100 years, deciding what everyone else should read." Well, at least New York chose a novel that some potential readers regarded as controversial. Another of my problems with these city reading groups is that their selections smack of uplift. They seek to promote unity by choosing a book whose generally agreed-upon interpretation everyone knows in advance. What, after all, is there to argue about in To Kill a Mockingbird? We all agree, don't we, that racism is evil, and Gregory Peck, Atticus Finch, represents humanity at its best? To choose a morally thornier novel, like Flaubert's Madame Bovary or Ellison's Invisible Man, might actually provoke dissension. Such choices might highlight the truth that reading is more than just a diversion, that books can change the world, one reader at a time. It's not that I haven't learned more than I can ever acknowledge from the responses of other readers, from the great teachers I've had, from students, from listeners. But these exchanges have been casual and fleeting and valued all the more for being so. And most crucially, these memorable discussions have been about books that at least one of the people involved loved. That to me is the final deal breaker about these citywide book groups. They're too civic-minded and detached. In my own precious spare reading time, I want to read books other people have recommended because they've left indelible impressions. Here's one experience out of a blessed many that pretty much stands for me as the model of the perfect triangular encounter between a book and two readers. Many years ago, when I was a sophomore in college in New York and on Christmas break, I signed up with a temp agency to make some money. The agency sent me to fill in as a file clerk at a lawyer's office on Park Avenue South. The lawyer turned out to be an elderly gentleman who treated me with rare courtesy, asking about my life and what I was majoring in. When he found out I was an English major and that I hadn't read all of Shakespeare's greatest work, he became visibly saddened. As lunchtime approached, he handed me a menu from the downstairs coffee shop and told me to phone in an order for whatever I wanted, on him. Then he gave me an old paperback of King Lear he'd found on his bookshelves and urged me to read as I was eating. I remember that lunch hour. I ate a tuna salad sandwich and read Lear as snow fell outside the dark bowed windows of the office. The elderly lawyer returned sometime that afternoon and asked me how I liked Lear. I'm sure I said something dumb. Our conversation, along with my reading of Lear, stretched out over the next couple of days. Then the job was over and I left. The gift of silence and slow time is what that lawyer gave me. What our tiny reading group lacked in conviviality and regularity, it gained in magic. You can't prescribe literary magic or love by citywide committee. If you're lucky, you find the right books at the right time, or they find you.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. This is Fresh Air.